For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website. Well,
ground dwellers and cloud dwellers, somehow we are brought together by the great effort of many beings and technology. And somehow, even though we're always communicating, we don't always hear it and see it and smell it and taste it and touch it. This one great practice body with all beings. So Friday was evening was the summer solstice, and I think it's pretty clear that summer in has arrived. We had this long, long, cool, dry spring, and then an explosion of intense heat yesterday. And despite that, 16 people or more, I guess, sat zazen here for half a day and enjoyed that. And we have a little air conditioner that is helping us wonderfully. And you know, we just adjust to the current situation. Intense heat, and sometimes intense joy, and sometimes intense suffering. I had a dream. I woke up last night, and in my dream, I woke up. And my cell phone didn't work in my dream. And like, I had this dream, the world was under attack. And everything was no electricity, no nothing. And I'm in this dream. And then I woke up this morning and heard that there was an attack by the US government, which kind of just shocked me. But I really felt this fear in this dream. It's not that usual that I have dreams that are fearful, but of this like extreme disconnection and unknowability. And even in my dream, I'm like, how do I practice with this? Uh-oh, you know, I thought, uh-oh, the jig is up. And so, you know, this is our practice, being with what is. And there's some of what is conveyed in Zen practice, in Buddhist practice, is this teaching and gift of this subtle effort without desire, you might say, and deep attention and warm-heartedness that is part of the art of naturally adjusting to changing conditions. And I feel our dragons, you know, we've lived in at least, this is maybe our fourth or fifth dwelling place in the 20 plus years we've been in existence, and we adjust to these conditions. And the changes in the world, in generations, in our sangha. So I just really want to honor that. And maybe just offer our practice, at least from my perspective, our zazen presence. You know, may it benefit our troubled world. May all beings enjoy good health, happiness, peace, and safety. So everything I say today, I pray that it's directed in that way, even if I'm not so good at it. So thank you all. So it was really nice to wake up and find that there was an internet and cell phones, and we even got this microphone to work. You know, there's like... And I was also grateful to feel that deep, kind of penetrating fear. So I'd like to offer a little encouragement this morning. Last week, I spoke about a teaching story from a book called 49 Fingers. A collection of modern American koans, teaching stories by a Zen teacher named Michael Wenger. And just for context, I keep looking at this because there's this calligraphy. Here it is here. Maybe you can see it. Every time I look at this, I'm like, wow. It's like an explosion of life and arrow points, dragons meeting. I'll pass it around maybe later so you can check it out. Easy to overlook because it's so accessible. You know, we want like special teachings in Zen, you know, things that crack our brains open. They're so hard to read. But this reads, you know, like silk. So smooth. And it pierces like an arrow. So Michael Wenger is still living and was a student of a great teacher, now deceased, Mel Weitzman, who's the Dharma father of Darlene Cohen, who we studied, so this is lineage, and the Dharma grandfather of Lisa Hoffman, who was here with us just yesterday, and now maybe arriving at San Francisco Airport. And both my practice with Lisa and my study of Darlene led me to this book, because Michael was Darlene's teacher, and I'm like, who is this person, you know? So... you know, these teaching stories have a long, venerable tradition in Zen, koans, public cases, precedents. Mm-hmm. But I guess if somebody could make them up hundreds of years ago, we can make up our own. And I think it's really great. And they have a little bit of a format. You know, there's the case, which is the brief teaching story. Then there's a commentary, typically, in these collections by someone who collected, maybe, the story. Then there's verses or a bunch of verses that are sort of poetic responses to the story. So you can do this with every interaction you have in your life. You can tell a little story and check, make comments on the story. Write a verse about the story and share it with the world. In some ways, we're doing this all the time. Mel Weitzman commented, I think I mentioned this last week, that these teaching stories help us more clearly see how our ordinary life situations and encounters afford us the opportunity to recognize our boundless essential nature, seen through the lens of the most ordinary events. The ordinary I is the non-discriminating Buddha I, allowing ordinary and holy to disappear in the pure activity of seeing as it is, of tasting as it is, of smelling as it is, of touching as it is. It's what we do. We touch the floor in Kinhin, and when we raise our foot and contact the air. We could see with our feet. And our breath is moving us. So what I want to talk about today are three stories. Count them, three. I didn't look to see if anybody else merited three stories about them in this 49 fingers. But the person who did is someone named Lone Mountain, or Isan Tommy Dorsey, our famous ancestor, who was a student at San Francisco Zen Center with Sisuke Roshi, I believe, and later with Richard Baker Roshi, who was Sisuke Roshi's successor. And Isan was the first abbot of Hartford Street Zen Center. I think it had another name before that, but I forget what it is. But this Hartford Street Zen Center is located in sort of the epicenter of queer in San Francisco in the Castro neighborhood. And I Googled, you know, because I'm like, I don't know that much about Isan, and I want to kind of make sure I'm not missing too much. So I Googled, I Googled Isan Dorsey. And I thought, oh, I'll get the dates of birth. And then something popped up in the search, and it said Isan Dorsey, drag queen. And so some have referred to this person as a bodhisattva in high heels. So Isan was famous for being an out gay man who'd had a previous career as a drag queen performing. But I don't want Isan's teaching to be sort of idealized or obscured, or we distract from this person's offerings because of, you know, kind of their identity, one of their identities. So easy for us to do that. So here's case 25. From 49 Fingers, the first case with Isan. And it's called The Thorns on the Rosebush Might Hurt Your Horse. So Michael Wenger writes, Isan Dorsey every week would host a Sunday brunch at Jamesburg House. The last stop between the 14-mile dirt road into the Tassajara Monastery. This was a way station. You know, people pass through Jamesburg on their way into the isolation of the temple. It's kind of like, didn't they have like the like last stop saloon or something like that? This is kind of what this Jamesburg is. And many people here have probably been to Jamesburg or know about it, you know, and Tassajara. But my teacher said Isan and I think a lover. I thought that's what I heard, but I'm not sure. But Isan and somebody else lived at Jamesburg. And my teacher said that he would like always have like a pot of chili on the stove so that people going through could have some good meal before they went on the way in and out of Tassajara. Who knows if that's true. But Michael Wenger goes on to say, there was a rough outlaw cowboy who would come and let his horse loose where it would graze in the garden. And no one would comment on this behavior, right? All good Zen students, they're all like grumbling inside, going, who's this goofball? You know, they're ruining this, their horse is grazing on us. But we're like bodhisattvas, we're not going to say anything. But Isan finally said to this, you know, kind of surly outlaw cowboy, maybe even had a gun, you know, So people might have been scared. Who knows? But Isan said, you should tie your horse up. The thorns on the rose might hurt him. So he didn't be like, what are you doing eating my roses? Or tie your horse up. You know, it's like, protect your horse. The thorns on the rose bush might hurt him. Didn't say, you're eating my roses, you know. So this is a commentary, which tells a little bit more about Isan. Isan was a student of Suzuki Roshi and a disciple of Baker Roshi. In his later life, he founded Hartford Street Zen Center and the Maitri AIDS Project. I believe the first hospice for people dying of AIDS in the country, which was located in that house. So people would be sick and Isan would just be like, okay, we'll take care of you. Isan himself, I believe, eventually died there of AIDS. So Michael goes on, skill and means is no mean feat, even for the skilled. Who chops wood and carries water, looking out for both the axe and the wood? The rose and the horse, the corrector and corrected. Great compassion includes wisdom and great care. Can you tether yourself in a way that all are free? Isn't this great? Who chops wood and carries water, looking out for both the axe and the wood, the rose, the thorns, the horse, the corrector and corrected. Great compassion includes wisdom and great care. Can you tether yourself in a way that all are freed? And then, in his fashion, Michael Wenger, whose name, Dharma name, is Dairyu, great dragon, so truly an ancestor of ours, says, horses, roses, brunches and gardens. So much hogwash. Isan cooks them all up. How much will you eat? You know, can you take this teaching of appropriate response and skillful means in? You know, there's a quote from Dogen's Four Bodhisattva Methods of Guidance. It says like something, you know, a kind word can turn the nation. I so wish I had that capability, you know. But we have these teachers who show us the way. And if we're lucky, once in a while, something like crazy like that pops out. Like, oh, well, you might want to tie your horse up because it might hurt, get hurt on the thorns. Instead of, get out of my garden, you know. So much could be said, but this idea of upaya and skillful means, how do we respond to a thorny moment? Because we're in a thorny moment almost all the time in our lives, but in particular, at this moment, no one can tell you but this question. Horses, roses, brunches, and gardens. Sounds like a child's rhyme or something. So much hogwash. Isan cooks them all up. How much will you eat? How much can you take these teachings in? How much room do you have for everything in the world? And, you know, if you're like, I'm kind of falling short, welcome to the club. That's just the way it goes. But waking up in the midst of that is really our practice. And then can always be like, wow, I could do that a little differently. It might work differently. Let me check that out. Case 32. Everybody gets what they deserve. Ihsan Dorsey said, everybody gets what they deserve, whether they deserve it or not. That can go into the cauldron or the mixing bowl here with the thorns and horses and roses. Things are what they is part of this, I believe. Everybody gets what they deserve, whether they deserve it or not. Commentary by Michael Wanger. First you observe it, then you name it. Perhaps karma. If you then see how it measures up to the name, you become lost in despair, pride, or confusion. But what is acceptance beyond acceptance? What is it that thus comes? Do you deserve it? Do you not deserve it? How is it different if you deserve it or not? Perhaps the law of karma is bigger than your evaluation. The merging of difference and unity is a statement, like Ihsan's. Healthy or ill, Ihsan met each moment. Perhaps you deserve more than these meager words, alas. Then another great verse. Old Basho's splash. You already know what is being referred to, but if you don't, I'll give you a hint. A famous haiku by a famous haiku master, a little kind of Japanese-ish, Zen-ish poetry. So this is what this refers to. The old pond, a frog leaps in, the sound of water, something like that. Splash, the sound of water, something like that. But this is Dairyu's verse about this little case with Ihsan. So old Basho's splash rings in our ears. Whether you like this poem or not, the frog got wet. So us little froggies are getting wet. But with what? With the Dharma? With life? With the dream that all cell phone service was gone and the world under attack? So these great teachings, you know, are about inconceivability and living in inconceivability of not knowing and still making the effort to step off of the pole into the free fall of our life, of this world. You know, I heard that Ihsan was also a very kind person. You know, walking on the street, somebody's passed out, might get right next to them and say, are you okay? Do you need some food? Do you want to come hang out and live at my little house called a Zen Center? Kind person. But Ihsan was fond of the term idiot compassion, which I think was coined by another teacher. But it's this kind of compassion that is an avoidance of taking on reality, you know, of like scared to set a boundary or limit or to say, hey, there's not enough room in the house. I can only do so much. I worked in an emergency room for a long time with doing evaluation and disposition with people who were brought there for mental illness reasons. And after the physicians said they were medically stable, they were sent to me, you know, get rid of these people. They're just mentally ill. And my job was to help them, you know. I mean, from the other the hospital's perspective, it was just like, get rid of them. But from my perspective, it was like, help them. So, but I was limited. I could give them a taxi fare to a shelter. Maybe I could order them a meal at the hospital, even though people would grumble. Why are you feeding these people? You know, they're going to stay here longer and take up a bed. Maybe that was taking up somebody else's bed, you know. But we're limited in how we can help. And we have to bear that at times. And it's inconceivable because we don't know. Even the smallest little sentence, like, your horse might get hurt by those thorns on the roses, can change something. So we just kind of leap in, plop, and get wet, and do what we can. So that's probably way plenty for me to go on about today. I could go on saying more stories, but I'll just say one more that I've heard, and that is that when Issam was dying, his teacher came and said, I wish I could change places with you. I don't want to lose you, you know. And Issam said, you'll get your turn. I know that I'm pretty sure that probably Tygon and some other people maybe have met Issam. I never did. Just at the time he was dying was the time I was starting to spend time at San Francisco Zen Center. So I only heard tales. So I'm just telling tales out of school, so to speak. But this is more about how do we practice? How do we enter the water of reality, the ocean of reality? And how does our practice help us realize wholeness, connection, and caring? So thank you all very much. And anybody have any comments or verses on anything I've offered to go forward? Leo Bodhisattva. And Leo, I think, is debuting as a doan for Sunday morning.
Official world first. Yeah, thank you so much for the talk. The past few days have had the theme of boundaries in a way to kind of like get along. I'm not sure if I'm explaining correctly. Also touches yesterday's Dharma about keeping Sangha healthy by talking about what is going on. And for me in my life, I've realized recently, even for decades, I've had this compassion, like through and through. And what usually happens is when you don't set boundaries with people, especially for me, actually, I tend to withdraw. And although I've been working on my own kind of like compassion and boundaries, I also have to make space for these uncomfortable like emotions that show up. And I'll try to avoid as much as I can. But I'm realizing it's to my own detriment. Like, always walking away from people and things, or like ghosting them or whatever. It's not the best approach for me. But what I wanted to share is kind of like this reinforcing theme of being kind to people instead of like being nice. I think we kind of like covered that yesterday. And showing up as authentically as I can, and also recognizing that sometimes I'm just going to go back to my square one, which is the idiot compassion, and I will do it again and again and again. So no particular point or punchline. It's just I just wanted to reiterate some of the themes and what sort of.
floating around for you in the pond?
Yeah, and, pretty much.
And, you know, idiots have a great place in Zen.
Of course.
You know, that's, you know, learning skillfulness is a practice of lifetimes. Fortunately, each breath is a new lifetime, so we have lots of opportunities. But, you know, it's a shock to realize, oh, I thought I was being nice and helpful, but we never know. Ambiguity is at the core of reality, especially for your embodied humans. So thank you, Leo, and thank you for compassionately ringing our bells.
No problem.
What is that? Ah, Nyo Bodhisattva.
Yes, good morning. Thank you very much. Really just two informational things. Incidentally, that the source, you know, credit where credit due is due. Can you hear me? It looks like you're looking. Are you able to hear me?
We're just having a little audio. Yep, say something again, please, Neozan.
I am saying something again. Is this better?
Now we hear you well, so go for it.
I'm also leaning my face into my phone, so I'll continue to do that. Just two informational points. The first one, incidental, credit where credit is due. The source of the concept or the idea, at least as it comes to us, of idiot compassion is Chögyam Trungpa.
Yes.
There may be a longer tradition there. I don't know, but that's how it came to us. The second thing I think people would be interested in knowing is that there was a biography done of Ihsan Dorsey called Street Zen. It's by a person named David Snyder. It's probably 30 years old. And the last time I read it, it had a slightly dated feeling. But I checked, it's in print, and it's a wonderful book. I mean, it's really deeply, deeply inspiring. And so I would urge people to get a hold of it, or maybe we have a copy of it at the library. I don't know, but I just wanted to make that recommendation.
Thank you, Neozan. Taigen Bodhisattva.
Hi, thank you for the talk, Ogetsu. I knew Ihsan fairly well. When I first came to San Francisco Zen Center, he was the director at City Center. And then later when he founded, actually it's called Isanji now, named after Ihsan Dorsey at Hartford Street. And now my Dharma brother Myo is the abbot there. But anyway, Ihsan was, he'd been a drag queen. He'd also been head of a commune in the 60s. In San Francisco, and started going to sit with Suzuki Roshi, and eventually became a priest and a teacher and all that. Ihsan was really a remarkable person. He was just really, he'd done everything. I mean, he'd been a junkie, he'd been a drag queen, he'd been a commune leader, he'd been, you know, he had done everything, you know, and so he was very accepting of everybody. He just was, you know, anybody who had done anything was it was okay for his son. So he was just this really kind person who knew and had done everything and accepted everyone completely, no matter what. So anyway, I just want to celebrate his son. He was really dynamic and dramatic and a fun person, really a good guy. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Taigen. You know, not everyone who's done everything is that flexible and open and kind. It would have been really wonderful to hear him talk about that. Anyone else? Wait.
Can you hear me?
Nicholas
Yes.
Nicholas has something to say. Would you like to talk, Nicholas?
Just briefly, yeah. I posted a quote from the New Yorker. There was an interview with Ihsan, and I think it has a lot of crucial bits of his practice story and his teaching and his death. So it's worth reading if you're interested in knowing more about him.
Thank you.
Do you know, I don't usually post. I post it in chat. Does that come through to you?
I saw that it was in chat, and I don't know if, is that the article that was in by Katie Butler in Talk of the Town? I don't
Yes.
So before Ihsan died, that was published, I believe.
I think, it was in the, this was in the like late 80s, yeah.
So people can check the chat for that, but did you have anything else you'd like to
It's, you know, comment? It's good to be back. You know, I've had a whirlwind time. Finally sold the family house, and I was in New York for 10 days. I went to a retreat for 5 days. It's just been quite busy and a lot of good stuff. And I missed my weekly groups, Thursdays and Fridays, and other things. But, I'm approaching a new life, I guess. So we'll see what that turns out to be. Thank you.
Thank you. Look forward to sharing that new life with you.
Thanks.
Wade, I believe, had something to say in the room.
Sometimes the frog leaps just for the joy of jumping, and then is surprised when it falls and gets wet.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's always surprised.
Sometimes the horse munches on the beautiful flower and is surprised to get pricked.
Everything's possible. Anything else? I hope everyone is staying comfortable if you're in a warm climate. And if you're not, I hope you're staying comfortable despite all odds.
You know, I do mm-hmm. have something just occurred to me.
Yeah.
You know, I love that Ihsan could find a place in our community and you know, there probably were some people that judged him, but he was embraced by the San Francisco Zen community. And, you know, it's just lovely to be in a spiritual community that is open to all. So thank you all for creating a very inclusive and open community.
Thank you to Nicholas. You know, to be open to all takes a lot. And when I was reading about Ihsan's life, I was thinking, oh yeah, you know, I watched a video of somebody who practiced with Ihsan and said when that person walked into San Francisco Zen Center, nobody said hello or looked at them. And then all of a sudden Ihsan appeared. And it was like, oh, hi, you know, let me show you around. Let's ring the densho bell and hands this person who just walked in the door, you know, the mallet for the densho. And, you know, people were looking like, you know, all these Zen students grumbling, like, it's not time for the densho, you know, what are you doing? But this welcoming aspect, and I think it got lost at a certain time, and I think we're relearning it. And part of Ancient Dragon, what I love about us is we're practicing with that welcoming, which isn't just about welcoming humans, but welcoming everything. So I pray that it's so.
Sure.
May our intention equally welcome every being and place with the true compassion of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless.
We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it.